Transportation and Social Services Committee to meet, to order. Let the record show that this is Friday, March 2nd, 1984. Meeting is being held in room 112 of the Capitol Building in Juneau, Alaska. Let the record show that Representatives Ewing, Martin, Davis, and Kopanen are present, along with Fisher, the chairman. On our calendar today, we'll be considering House Bill 565, which is an act relating to hearsay evidence and prosecution of sexual abuse of a minor, and amending Rule 804 and 803 of the Alaska Rules of Evidence. We'll be considering House Bill 566, which is an act relating to training of teachers and principals on the subject of sexual abuse of a minor, and we'll also be hearing House Concurrent Resolution 46, which is related to background checks on school district employees who come in contact with children. I'd like to welcome all of you who came to testify and those who came to observe, and welcome all of those online at our teleconference. I'm not sure who we've got online yet, but I'd like to announce that right now, if you can tell me.
Yes, thank you. We have Fairbanks online, and we have Matsu online, and we have Mr. Raleigh Port at an off-net in Wasilla online. Chairman. Matsu.
And who else?
And Mr. Raleigh Port.
Okay.
No, he's,
where is he at?
He's in Wasilla.
Oh. Anyway, thank you very much for joining us. We'll start by holding our first hearing on House Bill 565. And I'd like to, in your packets, gentlemen, you will see a committee substitute. I'd like to ask for a motion to have that be considered, and then we'll ask for the sponsor to give us her comments, if you would please. I'd entertain a motion to
we adopt the committee substitute,
yeah.
Madam Chairman.
For consideration.
Madam Chairman, I'll move an action unanimous consent that we adopt the committee substitute for 565. Action unanimous consent.
Objections? Hearing none. So moved. Representative Locker is here with us, and she is before us to give us her comments on the bill. Representative Locker, please state your name because we're electronically recording.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm Representative Barbara Locker from the Madawaska-Sitting Borough, District 16, CA. I would like to take just a few minutes to explain to some of the people in the network some of what has gone into this legislation. First of all, it is not my legislation. It belongs to many of the people in this room and many of the people out in the network. I would like to thank this committee for the timely hearing of this legislation, but more important, for the support of this chairman and for her staff in being able to bring before this committee even more improved legislation than what was first introduced by me. Just a few remarks, Madam Chairman. Sexual abuse of minors has recently come to the forefront in my community. And because of this and our research, we found out that it is coming to the forefront in the entire state. We have many people working on the problem, and we felt that they just needed a little help. And what this legislation tries to do is to give them some of those tools. There is an increased awareness on the part of children, parents, friends, and professionals that sexual abuse is wrong and children should tell someone. However, too many cases are still going unreported because many children do not understand that they can talk about it and that they will receive help. Many adults still minimize the problem and want to deny that it exists. National statistics indicate that one of every four girls and one of every eight boys will be sexually abused before their 18th birthday. I think those statistics will convince this committee that it is not just a Matsu problem, not just a problem in Alaska, but a national problem. The Division of Family and Youth Services reports that active cases involving suspected sexual abuse increased from 142 in 1980 to 529 in 1983. The record for prosecution of this crime is no more encouraging. According to the Chief Prosecutor's Office in the Department of Law, Criminal Justice Division, of the 252 cases screened in 1983, The chief prosecutor declined to pursue 85 cases because he felt that the state's evidence was insufficient. In addition to the cases that the state declines to prosecute, some cases may be dismissed after they are filed with the courts. In 1983, 190 cases involving sexual assault of a minor were disposed of in the Alaska courts. Of these 190, 117 defendants pleaded guilty, and another 27 defendants were convicted in court or jury trials. There are several different positions from which to attack the problem of sexual abuse of minors. First, we must focus attention on prevention and education with the general population. Second, treatment programs must be available for the victims, for non-offending family members, and for the perpetrators. Finally, changes must be made within the criminal justice system to facilitate the prosecution and punishment for this crime. Your deliberation over these bills before you today will be a start on that path. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Locker. I'd like to make a comment to you, and that is, I was very happy to hear that you placed prevention first and foremost, and I congratulate you on your forethought. Thank you.
Thank you. I now leave you with this prize legislation and all these people that are here to defend it, and this committee. I have other duties. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Locker. We have several people online in the Wasilla, Matsu, and Fairbanks area, and we have people here to testify in Juneau. I'd like to go now to Wasilla first and hear testimony from the person there. I believe it's Trooper Raleigh Port. If you would please come forward, and because you are being electronically recorded, please tell us who you are for the record.
Raleigh Port, and I'm an investigator for the state troopers. Am I coming in okay there?
Yes, you are, Raleigh. Go ahead.
And let me first give you a little bit of history here. I have lived in Alaska all my life and out of Fairbanks. I'm currently assigned in the investigation field and have been so assigned for the last 13 years. Currently, my job is to supervise an investigation unit where the majority of our cases are sexual assault cases against juveniles and against adults, but the majority of them are against small children. Since the first of the year, we've had 29 sexual assaults, and that's individual victims, 29 individual victims. And we believe that this will probably continue throughout the year, and we believe that it is definitely an increase from last year. We are in total support of the hearsay and being able to allow to get a hearsay into court. The way that, and the reason of that is that, or the reason for that is that in the vast majority of the cases that we investigate here in the Valley, we have our district attorney who takes probably 90 to 95% of our cases and presents them to a grand jury. At the grand jury proceeding, the juvenile must testify and in court. After that time, if we go to trial, and the majority of the time we do not go to trial because there is a plea, then the child, if we don't go to trial, then of course the child does not have to go through the second court proceedings. What we're trying to do, and what we'd like to see happen, is that instead of the child having to go in front of the grand jury and testify, that we'd be allowed to play a tape recording at the time of grand jury, and that testimony would basically cover what the child's interview was and exactly what happened. By doing that, if we were able to do that, and the child did not have to go through grand jury or the court proceeding, then probably 90% of them would only have to tell their story one time, and that being to us. Right now, under the team concept that we have working in the valley, a victim, once they tell DFYS or a counselor at the school or whomever, at that time they are not interviewed. They are turned over to the Alaska State Troopers and we do the investigation. So we do the first interview of that person. It is a very in-depth interview, and after that time, that hopefully that victim will not have to make another statement saying how she had been sexually assaulted by one, two, or in one case here, six different people. She only has to tell that story one time, and that's to me. With the hearsay rule, I could then take it to grand jury, play the tape, and that would be the end of it. I say, in most cases, I say that because in most cases we get confessions to these crimes of incest and to sexual assault outside the home. And just the majority of the time, the grand jury is the only court proceeding they ever have to go to. That's the reason that we, I guess that I'd say that we are in favor of that. There's also a certain screening process that we go through. We would never like to think that a victim is able to come in and tell a story and automatically someone is incarcerated for that and taken before the grand jury. At the time that a statement is taken, that's only the first investigative step. There are many others, physical examinations, physical gathering of evidence, at the home or at the place where it occurred, and all these things are done to back up that individual victim's statement. It's not only the victim's statement that would be presented into grand jury or into later court purposes, but or court proceedings, but everything else that we have been able to gather is what we would put in there. So it's not just the statement that would be put into court, and it would not be just the statement of a victim that is going to have charges brought against a person. That's basically, I guess, what I wanted to say. I would answer any questions that anybody might have in reference to this.
Thank you very much for your informative testimony, Raleigh. I have a question that I'd like to ask you. In the general procedures of interviews that the troopers do, and the city police, and in fact, if there are any involved, is it general procedure to videotape record those interviews? Over.
Okay, in the Mad Valley, we do not interview, we do not videotape the interviews of the children simply because we cannot get it into court. At the time of trial, the videotape cannot be used in lieu of the victim. I think if there's someone there from the Attorney General's office, they might be able to, or they might be testifying here a little bit, and they might be able to tell you the reasons for that.
Thank you very much, Raleigh, for that testimony. Are there any questions of the witness from the members of this committee? Hearing none, thank you again very much.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
I'd also, before we ask for the next witness, would like to recognize that we have Valdez online. There are some observers from the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Welcome to our committee hearing, ladies and gentlemen. The next person that we would like to call is here in Juneau, and his name is Charles Fry, please. Please come forward. And you're being recorded electronically, and so for the record, would you state your name?
Yes,
please.
I'm Charles Fry.
One moment, Mr. Fry. You must press that also. There you go.
Charles Fry, Program Coordinator for the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Thank you very much for allowing us to witness our support of HB 565, the hearsay evidence bill in conjunction with sexual abuse of a minor. The Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault supports the admission of hearsay evidence in child sexual assault trials. As we're all aware, many children of sexual assault are much too young to, number one, withstand the rigors of a trial, and number two, to be really effective witnesses. Even though that's true, their disclosure of sexual assault to police officers and other professionals, I think, in less threatening circumstances, should be available to the juries for their consideration. Also, of course, children often block out their very negative experiences and sometimes can't remember the specifics of the experience, especially if you put them under the stress of a trial. And I think we all agree that these children certainly deserve the protection of the criminal justice system just as much as older and more articulate individuals do. And although the admittance of hearsay evidence is not traditional in the court system, there are, of course, several exceptions to the rule. This circumstance, I think, child sexual assault certainly warrants, if anything does, another exception. And we certainly support wholeheartedly the concept of this bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fry. The question to the witness from any member of this committee? Again, thank you very much. Let the record also show that Mr. Pessinger is present and was for quite some time now. I beg your pardon, Sam.
That's fine.
The next person we'd like to call is in Matt Sue. His name is Ruth Ellen Anderson, please. And for the record, Ruth Ellen, if you are coming forward, you are being electronically recorded, so for the record, please state your name and affiliation.
Yes, my name is Ruth Ellen Anderson, and I am the Executive Director of the Valley Women's Resource Center, which is a member of the, which is funded through the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And I'm also, our agency is also a member of the Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. I welcome the opportunity to testify briefly on this bill because basically our agency does support this bill. Our board has reviewed this bill and supports the initiative taken by Barbara Locker in bringing it to the attention of the legislature. As a person who has personally sat by as an advocate and support for young children who are being interviewed by Raleigh Port during an interview for related to a sexual assault case, I can tell you that the way that is done by him is very human, very low-key, very objective, and I really felt very good about that process. I know that he records everything, and in talking to the girls after and during the case where this was, where the testimony was being taken, they felt assured by his presence that he was being very objective and helpful to them. We feel that one of the things that's most important about hearsay evidence, even though Raleigh spoke to the fact that most cases do not go beyond the grand jury phase, we feel that one of the most important things for children, particularly in incest cases, is that they not have to sit in a courtroom and face members of their family who may have sexually molested them and who may, by their visual contact with them, continue to abuse them in emotional ways. We feel that children are very subject to, even that children that we have known in this situation oftentimes love the person who has victimized them and get different messages, very confusing messages in all of this. So at the courtroom site, at least, we feel that it is very important that an objective videotaping be used. And of course, we support the use of videotapes and hope that this will help to initiate the use of videotapes in courtrooms generally, where it will help the victim from and keep the victim from further abuse and further mental harm.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ruth Ellen. Are there questions of the witness from any of the members of the committee? Hearing none, thank you again. Let us go now back to Juneau here, and we have next on our list Mr. Bernie Holland. Is he present?
Bernie has another hearing that he has to go to, and he's going to come back later to testify.
we'll skip over Mr. Holland, who has just left the room for a short time, and go to Marjean Jackson, then, please, who is here in Juneau. Marjean, you're going to be electronically recorded, so please state your name, affiliation, and your teleconferencing so we can talk. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Marjean Jackson, age 42, and I'm sitting here as a victim of your sexual abuse law. I am the mother of a child who claims she was touched sexually. I read the testimony that she gave to the state trooper. They asked the question, and she said, to almost all the way through the interview. I sat in sessions with social workers who told her, "You felt sexually abused, didn't you?" And she said, being led entirely through this. The child was not sexually abused. But we as a family have been completely destroyed by health and social services. And that includes my daughter, as well as my husband and I. It has cost us $10,000 so far, and we're not through yet. To allow the hearsay evidence also, I don't think so. I don't think that's right. I'm a victim of laws, and if this is what our country is coming to, and the lack of freedoms that our children are being turned against us. This happened right after the social awareness in the school, where they go out and teach them about abuse and sexual and otherwise, and then they say, "How many of you are being abused?" to the students in the classroom. But there's not too many children that I know that don't feel like they're abused at one time or another. So I'm a victim of this type of thing, and I don't agree with what's happening. It's being used, and it's being used to tear up families, just like it was in some of the communist countries. And this isn't the America that I believed in. These laws are not the laws that I believed in. And it's not wrong.
Thank you, Marjean. Would you still remain? May I ask you some questions, please? It must have been very hard for you to come before us today and explain that to us, and I really thank you very much for your sincerity. If I may, could you tell us how old your daughter was?
13.
And at the time that this series of events took place, how old was she?
She was 13, and it's still ongoing. Still have charges against to come up against me, and it's still ongoing. In my testimony, I know I'm taking a chance that they'll come at me with something else, because they have. They let the child come back into the home because they had social services had determined there wasn't really a problem. She wanted to come back and go on vacation with us. After she'd been back there for a month, she kept telling me, I don't have to do this. I don't. She said, I don't have to do what you tell me. She wouldn't do the dishes. She would walk out of the house and go wherever she wanted to. And I got angry with her and naturally hollered at her. It was a tense situation anyway. And so she called up the social worker, and she was right. She didn't have to do anything I told her anyway, because she could call social service, and they come and took her away. They're determined to use these things, these tools, as you call them, that you're giving them, to break up families rather than pull them together. And one more tool such as this, it's just one more tool.
I would also like to mention to you, for your satisfaction, I hope, that the piece of legislation that we have before us, Marjean, is dealing with children under 10 years of age. How do you feel in relationship to that? Do you feel as strongly about that if a child is 6 or 7, more aptly perhaps being able to having to say uh-huh to every question that was brought to them, or such things as that? How do you feel about that?
A child should be able to describe what happened, even at 6 or 7. And I can speak from experience. A child at 6 or 7 can say what happened. And I think being prompted with, did he touch you there? Did he do this? A child's just going to agree with an adult that's being nice to him at that particular point in time. And I think that they could be better led into telling what happened rather than at least the methods used in this town, you know, that I think it was.
Representative Pessinger?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Marjorie, thank you very much for coming before the committee. When we work on something that's this sensitive, we sometimes get emotional, and my own emotionalism might interfere with my judgment. And I've tried to be very supportive of very strong laws on sexual offenders, but it seems to follow then that we will want to have an accurate determination of guilt, and that this is an area that we want to look into very, very carefully. I know in our Constitution we allow someone to adequately inquire of a witness, and we don't want to make a mistake. And so you're pointing out the other side of a very serious problem, and I'm glad you have. Because we have, sometimes we have divorces occurring, for example, and we have a lot of sensitive things occurring to where this could be very easily abused, very easily manipulated. And all we want to do is protect our children, but always, always base it on the truth. So I thank you for coming forward. And I will consider both sides of the issues, and you've helped me to point that out. And that's compatible with what we want to do here.
Representative Gall.
Ms. Jackson, your case is pending before the court, or has been determined?
We had a trial against my husband. It was a hung jury, a 3-3 hung jury. And they are determining, as Representative Hester said, my ex-husband got involved in the middle of it. They did not arrest my husband until 5 months after the original accusation was made. I can only assume, based on what little I heard, it, I was kept from the courtroom as well. But from what little I heard, I can only assume that my ex-husband called up either Health and Social Services or the district attorney himself. So how come you haven't thrown that bitch in jail yet? He already had my daughter. There's no trial in my home now. And this was just vindictive on the part. And something like this, just to allow hearsay. And as I said, my daughter told me the next day why she was doing it. Or the next time I got to talk to her after she had been to Health and Social Services. I could not testify to that in court because that was hearsay. They would not allow anything that had gone on before, after, in court.
That was the purpose of my question, to find out whether, in fact, hearsay testimony was used. Was this testimony by a social worker? Was that used in the court, or was it not?
She only testified that she did her job. She took it
to the court. So the trial in this particular case was called upon to testify?
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Are there further questions of the witness? Representative Pessinger, while Margie is in front of us, could you give us, because you were an attorney, could you give us what is interpreted by law as far as hearsay is concerned? According to what we've been hearing so far, it relates to videotaping an interview by a police officer. What else is hearsay?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. If I were to tell Representative Ewing, for example, that I saw Representative Davis do something bad, Representative Ewing could come into court and say what I see it to be used as the truth of the matter, namely that Representative Davis did something bad. By doing that, I escape being, or I don't escape, but I mean they're not, questions are not put to me, so to speak. And that's a problem. If I'm going to say that Representative Davis did something bad, perhaps people should question me about what I saw. And I escape being cross-examined, and that's the risk of it. You can do a lot of hearsay. It's real risky. To use it is real risky, and the exceptions we draw with it have to be done, I think, quite carefully.
So if I can explore this a little further then. So if a videotape is entered as evidence and the jury or court is able to see that evidence, there is no cross-examination ability there for the other side to do so, and therefore it's hearsay. Is that correct? In other words, the person is not there personally to answer other questions that might be raised by someone else.
Well, Madam Chairman, I have less problems with the video. Like if someone were to take a video of what I said, at least they could make an evaluation of what I'm doing, but the answer to your question is yes, that the actual video would be, in a sense, hearsay because it's because the person making the statement is not there in court. And if we're only allowing video here, I'm not as bothered by that, and I need to look at my video more carefully. What I wouldn't want to see is just someone coming and saying, such and such a person said, that would cause me a lot of concern.
One of the things that I asked that for was because the bill before us talked about hearsay, and most references that I got to Sparacra talks about videotaping, and some of the testimony here talks about videotaping, and if that's what it is, and we should define that and mention it rather than use the word hearsay, or if it's going to be open the right up. That's another matter.
Thank you.
Mr. Boss, if you come forward, please. We are being electronically recorded, and therefore I'd like to ask to have your name stated in your affiliation, if any.
Thank you. My name is Detective John Bowes. I'm with the Fairbanks Police Department and assigned to the Fairbanks Child Protection Task Force. I would ask if you could hear.
Yes, you're coming in fine, John. Proceed.
Thank you. I would testify on behalf of the legislation before you today, House Bill 565, 566, and Resolution Number 46. One of your questions I was hearing here is whether or not we are using videotape or plan to use videotape, and we are using it. Of course, we cannot use it, of course, in court right now, but we plan to use it in the future to play to grand juries or to juries if the legislation is passed.
John, could I ask you a question? Is that the end of your statement?
Yes, that's pretty much it. I just wanted to let you know that we are in support of it and that I'm a member of the task force here and have been since we began it in 1981. We represent approximately 13 agencies, which includes the Fairbanks Police Department, the State Troopers, Department of Family and Youth Services, others.
John, when you are conducting an interview on a suspect or a victim of whatever crime it would be, and you are, let's say, being videotaped, is it procedure or necessity or law that you have the opposition attorney or some representative of that person in the same room, and then is that person allowed to ask questions as well? Or are you able to interview or interrogate that person without the presence of someone else? Over.
We do routinely interview without anyone else present unless the offender would so request an attorney be present. I would think that would be the only person we would permit in an offender-type interview or interrogation situation. There are other people present during taping situations. times allow the social worker and possibly the district attorney to participate or witness that interview.
Well, let's just say, John, that it is a 6-year-old child who has somehow come before you, that has, someone said that he or she was sexually abused. And let's say it was a social worker and the kid was pulled out of school and brought over there. What representation is there on behalf of the child in terms of an attorney representing the child's best interest other than the district attorney or the social worker? Is there anyone else present or what's the policy with your police department?
During the initial investigation or interview, no, there is no attorney assigned. Later on during procedures or in the investigation, and generally after a charge is made, a guardian ad litem is appointed by the state to represent the child's interests. But during the initial assessment, there is no attorney, but social services act as that representative for the child's interests.
Thank you very much. Representative Kessler has a question.
Thank you, John. John, I don't have any problem with what you're saying, and I concur with it. I believe in your ability to do a videotape and to really present what has occurred and what has been said. I think my problem was when I was just reading this bill very briefly, it just referred to hearsay evidence in general. It didn't, you know, I think maybe we might need to define a little bit what kind of hearsay evidence that you would want to use. And you might want to help us in this task. If I read this bill correctly, it just says that hearsay evidence can be used if certain things occur. It doesn't say that it has to be a videotape. I find a videotape reliable, and I think a videotape has probative value. And I think you could do an excellent job, and the videotape would be presented to a trier of fact. But do you agree with me that maybe we need to define the form of the hearsay that could be presented to the trier of fact, rather than just say, hearsay evidence, period?
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. It does need to be defined. Now, I'll present for the problem that we see in these, we'll call them tender age cases between the ages like 2 and 6. The major problem we find is that either judges will not allow the testimony because of the tender age or because they are very nonverbal. And during the interview, we find through the role playing with the dolls that we use in these interviews that the child is able to respond in certain ways, but not verbally, but we do find sexual abuse present because of the way they use the dolls and the questions that we ask of the children. Those types of nonverbal responses are recorded on videotape and serve to illustrate quite well that this child is sexually abused and has been, maybe for some considerable period of time. So that would be one way we would want to use the videotape, is to show either the grand jury or a Superior Court jury through the use of videotape and not just by an audio tape.
Representative Gall has a question, John.
Thank you. Do I understand you to be saying that if the language of this bill were changed to specify that videotape interviews with a child in this circumstance could be used or presented before a court, would that satisfy your concerns in this issue, or do you feel that other hearsay evidence need to be included?
Well, I think it does need to be included. I'll give you another example. I think that statements made prior to or subsequent to the videotape interview, such as remarks made to a non-offending mother, maybe, or maybe to a social worker, or maybe to a health professional, maybe to a doctor, to allow the testimony to come in and not have the child have to go into court and say that.
But what about having the child say that in a circumstance where the child could be videotaped? I'm trying to weigh here the issue of protection for the defendant with the need to develop full evidence. And the use of hearsay is excluded from the court for many obvious reasons, and the examples that you just gave seem to play to those reasons and could easily, in my view, create some problems, whereas if those statements were generated in front of a camera, then you would have the primary evidence, even if not conducted in the court,
which seems, if I understand your statement correctly, to be the essence of the problem, getting that evidence stated or getting that statement made in court. Certainly it would put the burden on the state to arrange for that circumstance, but at least that way we would be dealing with something that all parties could see came from the child and was not colored or changed in any way by another witness.
Well, I think I understand your concern, sir, but it's difficult for us to carry a videotape camera everywhere we go, let alone the expense to each law enforcement agency or other agency involved in the investigation of sexual assault. But if we go with more than one issue on hearsay, that would put the burden upon all agencies to buy videotape and carry it with them, and I think that's reaching a little bit too far.
Thank you.
Further questions of the witness from any of the members? Hearing none, thank you very much again, John, for your testimony. We'll come back now to Juno. The next person we have on our list here is Jan Still.
Lane Guinefort's going to take that place because she has to get right back to work, so she wants to testify.
And who is that we should set up?
I'll take her place.
All right, very good. Please come forward, and we are being electronically recorded, so please state your name clearly and your affiliation before you begin.
My name is Elaine Dunaporn.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
My name is Elaine Dunaporn, and my affiliation is as a parent with a mother. In some ways, this adult encourages me, and I think it would be very traumatic for young children to have to testify in court. I would like to recommend, or my deep concern with it is, I think there should at least be a video recording, if not a tape. I have had a close friend be accused of sexual abuse, and it was a social worker testing a six-year-old girl with the dolls three times. The first two times there were no witnesses. It was never video recorded. The case did go to trial. The state psychologist never met the child and only could testify as an expert witness on what the social worker testified the child's reactions were. And that really upsets me, as I think young children can be led. I think young children respond, as has been mentioned, very well to nonverbal communication. I would have had no problems with this if the original test had been video recorded or if there had been another person there. I think the test itself or the interrogations can be very traumatic for children, too. I'm pleased to hear that the two troopers who have testified seem to be very human and conscientious people about how they ask and that they are into video recording. Maybe Health and Social Services isn't. I don't know. That's not my point. I think the hearsay as it is in this bill is that there should be some way to reevaluate a child's response, perhaps by a psychologist or whatnot, other than just what someone observes that the child did. There's no way to evaluate that. There's no way, if you're accused of it, you could ever prove yourself innocent or prove yourself not guilty. By the way, on the availability of video recordings, these tests were carried out. I don't know if it was exactly a schedule, but it wasn't a spur-of-the-moment snap thing. You know, she had to get into her car and drive out with the dolls to test the little girl. At least two people, and the parent being informed, or so the parent can have a lawyer there, or even a tape recording. That seems only right. I have no further comments.
Thank you very, very much, Elaine.
I need to write my name.
Are there questions of the witness by any of these members? If not, thank you very much, Elaine, for your testimony. I'd like now to go back to Fairbanks. We have a witness there. I believe his name is Paul Bartlett. ask Mr. Bartlett to come forward, and you're being electronically recorded, so if you please state your name and affiliation for the committee and for the record.
Yes, my name is Paul Bartlett with the Alaska State Troopers. Am I coming through okay?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I've been employed with the State Troopers for over 10 years now, and been recently working more specifically in a unit designed to investigate child sexual abuse and also sexual assault of adults. My main concern is right now in regards to this legislation, House Bill 565, I do support it to a degree. I think as Detective Bowes stated just previously, we're somewhat together in relation to our support in the bill, that we both feel that it should be supported by the use of video equipment. And this certainly has become a very important tool for us in this area in dealing with these crimes. And it allows us to be able to show that when we do interview a child of the tender ages, between up until the age of maybe 6 or 7 and maybe even some older, that we do our job do it properly, and don't lead the child, as previous witnesses have indicated that they felt that might have been done. I feel that in doing these things with the video, that certainly the full impact of child's testimony would be very vividly seen, not just through words, but through the use of anatomically correct dolls. And that I do support the bill. I do think that there should be some changes to it to get those items in. I also wish to put out some information that I read not too long ago in a pamphlet that was published by the National League Resource Center for Child Advocacy and Protection for the American Bar Association, and the title of that was Recommendations for Improving Legal Intervention in Intra-Family Child Sexual Abuse Cases. And referring to one of the parts in that particular pamphlet, it talks quite a bit about evidentiary issues, and there's been quite a bit of study that's been done in that area, and dealing with competency of children. The issues that they dealt with, and I believe it's number five, or part five, perfection part four, evidentiary issues were competency and other issues. They spoke of the use of Rule 601, federal rules of evidence, in the use of retaining testimony of young children. There's also another chapter right after that that talks about the out-of-court statements of child sexual abuse. And these items possibly might be reviewed by this committee and looked at. There are some ideas in there that certainly might be able to be used in help creating a very good, positive piece of legislation. Certainly, we don't want to see a piece of legislation that is going to be enacted that will have a lot of constitutional challenges, and it certainly needs to be structured properly so these challenges will be to a very minimum. There is another item that is a possibility in helping in this area of dealing with the testimony of children with reference to child sexual abuse. And that is the possibility of the amending of the Alaska Rules of Evidence, specifically Rule 601, and to reword that to allow the, we'll say, the competency of a child between, say, the ages of 2 and 7, possibly, to assume that they are competent under the rules to testify in court as a witness or victim of child abuse or child sexual abuse. And under that tier of fact, they may consider duty of a witness and to tell the truth. I feel that, of course, that would give the trier the ability to weigh the child's testimony and give it weight where they feel it it should have, and also if they feel this child's testimony is not sufficient to disregard that portion. I think that our biggest problem in this area is the lack of the ability at this point to get cases involving child sexual abuse on very young children into the court system, period. Right now, there is nothing being done about several cases that I have, and I know that Detective Bow sitting next to me can verify on several on his. With children 2.5 to 4 years old, thereabouts, basically, if you were able to view the videos that I have here in Fairbanks, there'd be no question in your mind that these children have been sexually abused by their parent. And even in one case, not mentioning, of course, any names, I let a father of a little girl that I interviewed for this same type of crime, I let him view the video as a technique in trying to get some admissions from him to prevent this thing from maybe going to court. After viewing the video, his only comment was, quote, "I know now why you're talking to me," close quote. And that's basically what we have. That case may possibly never go to trial. The only saving grace there may be is that the protection of the child still, it will be held through civil means through the courts to prevent the child from being with the offending parent. I don't have any other comments, I think, at this time, if there's any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bartlett. Mr. Gall has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bartlett, could you tell me, then, do I understand you to be saying that your primary interest in this bill has to do with the videotaping of testimony, is that correct?
No, I also support Officer Bouse's response that we need to have the input of the initial reporters. Frequently they are, like one this morning I got from a woman who's a homemaker, coming into a person's home and just staying there for a few days a week and helping out with this family. She has come across this particular thing that I will be investigating tomorrow. And that statement should be able to be allowed as to what she overheard the children saying with reference to that. We're talking about a 3-year-old girl and two brothers a little bit older.
Well, she is allowed to testify with regard to her own experience, is she not? I mean, the statements of the child may not be used as evidence against the defendant, but the experience of the woman as background would nonetheless be her experience, would it not, and be admissible to that level?
Only to what she saw. She can't testify as to what they said. That's the hearsay problem right there.
I see. And you feel that that the testimony of a visitor in the home is appropriate testimony?
Well, in this particular case, this visitor is a supporting person, a professional person that does this type of thing. She's not just a housekeeper. She's professionally trained. I'd go on to say not just that, but family and youth services representatives, as John stated, doctors, frequently school counselors, more frequently not than in that case right now, where we find quite a lot of our cases coming from school counseling areas and professional people. These people are competent, they're qualified, they don't have any axe to grind, and their testimony is, of course, not going to be allowed.
Just to conclude, sir, I understand that in these particular cases, you feel that you have a credible and a professional witness, and certainly my intent, and I'm sure that of the committee and the sponsor of the bill, was to tighten up any loopholes that might provide an escape for a guilty defendant, using the technicalities of the law. But on the other hand, we have to be somewhat careful in protecting the rights of all of our citizens, and And that's the thrust of my question. Your answer refers to specific individuals whose judgment you personally accept, but this law would open up the courts to any individual who chose to make a comment, and of course, exclusion of that is the essence of the exclusion of hearsay testimony. I just would ask you once again if it would not be a great help to get the videotape part included in the law, even if it meant to be at the, even if it was at the sacrifice of other hearsay testimony.
Yeah, sure. I think that, you know, if it's possible, like, normally you can't do that right immediately, but certainly right following the initial response. There's no reason why we couldn't take that person in and say, look, explain to me what the child said on video, and then they could give their testimony at that time, if that's what you're getting at, and say, yes, I was in the home, and the children were whispering about something, and I overheard them and saw what they are, and this is what they said, and she tells what they said, and then go on and continue the investigation, of course, videotaping again, utilizing the child, and bring the child in separately, and not being witnessed by the other person, let the child say. I think that that's certainly a possibility. If there's a problem with this getting in, I think that I certainly could concede to using that method to get to the bottom of this.
Thank you, sir. No, I was just referring to the videotape testimony of a person with personal knowledge of the fact, but I have no further questions, and thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Bartlett. I have a question for you and also for all those online. One of the things you do not have before you is the work draft of the committee substitute, which we are on, which we have before us for consideration. Before I read that, I really want to read that so everybody knows what we've got before us. Mr. Bartlett, you mentioned earlier, I think you made a comment, if you could see the videotape about such and such, so and so, would it be permissible for you to make a copy of that tape should we want to present it to the committee for observation? Over.
Well, that'd be a legal, technical question, and I probably wouldn't be competent to sit here and answer, but it almost seems that, it's possible, though, because the child, in this case, I think is still in the care and custody of the state of Alaska, and I assume through the Attorney General's office there might be a possibility of that being done. Right now, the fact that case probably will never go to trial or to a grand jury certainly makes it more likely that you'd be able to do something like that. And if someone wishes to contact me at our office here, I could certainly try and talk with them about that.
Thank you, Mr. Bartlett. It occurs to me that sometimes people say things that we don't know exactly what they're saying, and also it would be interesting for our committee to observe such videotaping, and perhaps with the assurance of confidentiality in a closed meeting, the Attorney General would permit such a thing, and we are, Chair is going to consider that, and if we so desire, we'll see that, we'll contact the Attorney General ourselves, and if you can specify us right now, if there's a number to the tape or something that we can identify when we call upon you, if in fact we want to see that, I'd appreciate it if you just give us some identity remark about that tape.
Well, I will give you the initials of the victim. It'll be A.T. Alpha Tango, and the Attorney General's office in Fairbanks here is familiar with that case, and I can let them know what you're referring to.
Thank you, Mr. Bartlett. Now, for all of those folks who do not have out in the outlying areas the committee substitute, let me just tell you that the committee substitute in general does these things, and I'll read it. It changes the title to this extent, where the title read for sexual abuse of a minor before, it now would read for certain sexual offenses. And then the next change would be under Section 1 of the bill that you have would identify two or three different statutes which refer to a prosecution, and then the words after the words by a child under the age of 10, new language is put into the committee substitute that reads, who is the alleged victim of the offense describing the conduct establishing the offense may be admitted into evidence if. The next change in the bill would be down below subsection B of subsection 2, which reads, the child A testifies at the proceedings or B is unavailable as a witness and so forth. There is an extension of number 3 under that provision, where and there's a long length of extensions, and I'll read those to you so you get the gist of what the committee substitute says. 3, the prosecution informs the defendant of the intention to offer the statement and the contents of the statement sufficiently before the proceedings to give the defendant a fair opportunity to respond to the statement. And then B, under this section, 1, available or unavailable means the child A has a lack of memory of the subject matter of the statement being offered, B is unavailable to attend or testify at the hearing because of death or then existing physical or mental illness or infirmary, C is declared incompetent to testify by the judge, or D is absent from the hearing and the prosecutor has been unable to procure the child's attendance by reasonable means. Then there is a subsection 2 that identifies statement means an oral or written assertion by nonverbal conduct, or nonverbal conduct if the nonverbal conduct is intended as an assertion. There's another section C that says a child is not available under this section if the unavailability is due to the procurement or wrongdoing of the prosecutor to prevent the child from attending or testifying. There is another section, I believe that's a new section. Oh, yes. And in the last section of the bill that you see, there's an extension of section 2 then, which adds the language after the words Alaska Rule of Evidence, comma, by adding, and this is the language, an exception to the hearsay rule for hearsay evidence of certain statements made by the certain victims of certain sexual offenses. So although that may be long and lengthy, at least you get the gist of what we have before us, and I'm sure that the LIO offices will have available this committee substitute in the language that I just read so that you can further consider it. There we go. The next person we have on our list to testify is Carla Timcone. And by the way, while she's coming to the table, gentlemen of the committee, it's my intention to ask for a demonstration by a social worker or whoever performs these testing inquiries of children, exactly what takes place, what they say, what dolls they use, and so forth. I believe that it's enough that we really do need to see that literally. And thank you very much, Carla. Would you please, for the record and because you're electronically recorded, state your name and your affiliation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Carla Timcone. I'm the statewide coordinator of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, a nonprofit corporation representing 20 programs statewide. Members of the committee, I believe, have received copies of the network's position paper, so rather than just read that to you, I'd like instead to respond to a couple of points that were brought up previously in testimony. Just for the information of the committee, there was a piece of legislation passed several years ago that had to do with